Okay, so we're going to do a little conference called The Miracle of Lourdes, and I have a number of different ideas of what I wanted to talk about during this time, but we have a reasonable amount of space, so let me start off with describing Lourdes itself, because I know many of you have not had the chance to go, and you might just see different pictures, and it might not really sink in what it all is like. Okay? And this, I think, explains part of the miracle of Lourdes, is why I'm doing this. So Lourdes is about as far south in France as you can go. It is pretty close to the Spanish border, all right? Kind of like Corpus Christi is to Mexico, so Lourdes is to Spain. It's way down there. And it is at the very base, it's actually in the foothills of the Pyrenees Mountains. Now, the Pyrenees Mountains are gorgeous mountains. They are not like the Smoky Mountains, okay? They are like the Rockies. They are very tall, very jagged, very snow-covered. And so as you come up to Lourdes, as you come anywhere near Lourdes, you just see this line of white that just rises and rises and rises over the horizon, and it's just this place of absolute beauty. And you come into the town, it's a little town even still today, and it's cold. And you see a big river. Not a big river, but a river, okay? More than a coulee, less than the Mississippi, all right? Okay. You see a river coming down, and that's the River Gave. And that's the one that Bernadette would have mistaken. Okay. And like many mountain rivers, it's kind of this bluish-green color. And as you come into Lourdes, the sanctuary and everything is kind of outside of town, as it was back then. Because I want to remind you that Bernadette grew up incredibly poor. Her parents had been middle class, actually upper middle class, and then wasted all their money. Wasted it, somebody's trying to get in. Wasted it in countless, like, prodigal, lavish expenses. So that by the time Bernadette is ready to receive Lourdes, by the time Bernadette's, I think it's by the time she's 9, but certainly she saw the visions at 14. By that time, they were living in what was known as the cachot, the dungeon. And it really was a dungeon. It was the basement of a retired prison that a landlord rented out to them. It was a dungeon at one point. It was all they could afford. And it's this tiny little room that was underground. Poorly ventilated and not heated or anything like that. And so Bernadette would be required to go out and scavenge stuff from trash piles to burn in their little oven just so they didn't freeze to death for the winter. So that's how poor they were. And this is what happens with Lourdes, that it's February 11th, okay, so coldest part of the year. They're in the mountains. It's a cold, cold place. And she is going outside of town with her sister and a few other children to go scavenge for twigs, dead wood, anything that the woodcutters had not already collected. So not much, right? There's not a lot left there to scavenge, but if she doesn't find anything, the family could freeze to death. That's the situation she's in when she sees across the Gave, she sees a woman appear in the rock. Okay. And Our Lady asked her to come for a fortnight, and then she appears to her, I think, 3 times more after that. And it's the 8th apparition where she starts really asking her to kiss the mud. And then the 9th apparition where the waters, what I talked about this weekend. She appears a few more times. Okay, now, this created quite a sensation in France. It was in the newspapers and stuff, and people started coming. Bernadette was examined by psychologists, the closest thing they had back then, and also by medical doctors and, of course, by the priests. And they wrote about it in the newspapers of the time, and it was published. Now, one of the reasons why I think we need to really understand this, one of the reasons why this caught such national attention in France Remember that France is, you may not know this, France is roughly the size of Texas, okay, in terms of geographical size. Can you imagine? So I said she appeared in the Miraculous Medal at 1830. She appeared at La Salette in 1846, and then she appears in Lourdes in 1858. So that's 28 years. Let's say that this was 2028. Could you imagine that she had appeared in the year 2000 in Texas, and then again in the year 2016 in Texas, and was appearing for a third time, all approved by the church? There'd be a lot of attention. We might wonder what's going on with Texas. The Texans, of course, would claim that she was a citizen of the state. But the reality, right, is this caught a lot of attention. And you have this very poor girl kind of catapulted to the national limelight. One of the most beautiful parts of the miracle of Lourdes, and we're going to talk about healings and everything, but one of the most beautiful parts about the miracle of Lourdes is, to me, the miracle of Bernadette herself. Right? That after all this, she just disappeared. Right? She eventually enters a convent in Nevers, which is a good long way away from Lourdes. Yeah. Still in France, but solid, solid journey. It's about halfway across the country. And people would keep on trying to come see her, and her mother superior forbid it. And Bernadette didn't want it. And only like when it was like cardinals or archbishops who would come was she allowed to talk about Lourdes. And of course, Bernadette had gotten cholera whenever she was living in the dungeon, and then because of that had chronic asthma throughout her life, and was never healed by Lourdes, ever. And Bernadette, because of her chronic asthma, caught tuberculosis. Her respiratory system was so poorly adapted that she caught tuberculosis. And she died at the age of 35. No more visions, no more miracles, no more attention. She died as a humble nun. And probably my favorite saying of all, of everything that Bernadette ever said, I mean, even more than Lourdes, was one of the sisters asked Bernadette, they were sweeping the floor, and one of the sisters asked Bernadette, don't you feel like rejected? Like, don't you feel rejected by heaven? Or, you know, don't you feel resentful that you're not healed, that you have all these chronic issues, that you're not allowed to talk about it, that, you know, at the age of 14 you saw all these miracles and now you're a nun and there's nothing special happening to you? And she grabbed the broom out of the other sister's hand and said, what is this? She said, it's a broom. And she said, and what do you do with it when you're done sweeping the floor? She said, I put it in the closet. She said, I am God's broom. He used me for a purpose, and now he has hidden me away. And what incredible humility on her part to recognize that. This is accurate. She's a great saint. I want you to know that not every Marian visionary is a saint. In fact, very famously, the two who saw Our Lady of La Salette, the two children who saw Our Lady of La Salette 12 years before Bernadette, both lived lives that were really kind of sketchy, and neither of them are up for canonization. It was still a valid apparition, but they didn't live in accordance with it for the rest of their life. They're not bad people, okay? But they didn't live in accordance with it for the rest of their life. So I think the first miracle of Lourdes that I want to say is the miracle of Bernadette herself. Her humility, her courage, her ability at the age of 14 as a very poor girl not to exaggerate ever, not to seek any attention, not to seek any monetary compensation, not to seek anything. She was only 14. I mean, who in the world would blame a 14-year-old girl living in utter poverty for trying to make life a little bit easier on her family? No one. No one. And yet, oh, okay, it's over now. And yet, that's what Bernadette didn't do. Bernadette did not do that. Okay. So let's talk about then the waters. When Bernadette revealed the waters of Lourdes, there was no indication to her, there was no clue to her that these would be healing waters. Mary never said that. That was not part of the apparitions. And yet, already as the apparitions are going on, one of the citizens of Lourdes who had a very bad, bad condition, I forget what it is of this woman, but she went and washed in the Lord's water as it was going on. She was miraculously healed. And so that's where the idea that Lourdes' water causes miraculous healings comes from. So it wasn't explicitly part of the apparitions, but it did happen in the course of the apparitions. And of course, as you have all this media attention focused on Lourdes, that got reported everywhere, right? To date, there are, I think it's 77, 78, because I think they just did another one, about 77 or 78 official miracles of healing at Lourdes, which doesn't sound like a lot over like 165 years, but it is a lot because those are official miracles. There are a lot more miracles that happen at Lourdes than just the official ones. Okay. So to be an official miracle, you have to be diagnosed by a doctor as unhealable. This condition is untreatable. You go to Lourdes. You are, in fact, healed. Doctors have to examine you again and say there is no medical explanation for this healing. And then you have to report it to Lourdes, and the church has to investigate it and everything. So just for the sheer reality that a lot of people who get healed don't want to go through all that mess, there are a lot more miracles that happen at Lourdes than just the 70-something. But even 70-something is a lot. Because don't forget, like for a normal saint, you're supposed to have two miracles to be canonized as a saint. And for many saints, that could take up to 8 centuries, 9 centuries, 1,000 years before two miracles happen that are clear, official miracles. 70-something in the course of a century and a half, it's an awful lot. Now, part of that is the flock of people who come to Lourdes. Roughly 10 million pilgrims a year. On a normal year. On a normal year. Lourdes is quite possibly, it's hard to estimate this because it's hard to estimate who's a pilgrim, but Lourdes is quite possibly the most visited pilgrimage site on the face of the planet. And that's something of a miracle, too. I mean, like, this is really profound because Lourdes is hard to get to, okay? Even still today, it's pretty hard to get to. So Guadalupe, for example, which is magnificent, and we love Guadalupe. Guadalupe today is basically in Mexico City. You fly into Mexico City, you can just take easy transport, and you get to Guadalupe. Fatima, not in Lisbon, but it's easy to fly to Lisbon and then go directly to Fatima. There's the Lourdes Tarbes Airport, but there's not even a train, really, that goes from there to Lourdes itself. Public transportation to Lourdes is very difficult to get, if you get it at all. And there's no major city. I mean, Toulouse is kind of close, but it's a good bit away. There are so many other Marian sites, even among the greatest Marian sites, that are actually easier to get to and in many ways might have more claim on people's loyalty or pilgrimage. And yet, it's to Lourdes that people go. And I know that part of that is the promise of healing, or at least the hope of healing. There is no other, just think about it for a second. There is no other place on the face of this earth, no other place on the face of this earth that is connected with healing the way that Lourdes is. Name me one other pilgrimage site that people report continually going there and getting healed. This is nowhere. It doesn't exist. And this is a beautiful thing. Because as I mentioned in the homily, and if you haven't heard the homily yet, you will. As I mentioned in the homily, the reality is that Lourdes itself, the event of Lourdes, was something of a healing for a nation that had been quite broken. Broken in faith, broken by 3 separate revolutions, broken by all kinds of things. So there is healing there and the promise of healing. Now, another thing that I want to say about this reality of healing, it's an important part of this. We went, the two times I've been was when it was cold and not a lot of pilgrims, okay? Even still. You cannot go to Lourdes without seeing human brokenness. It's impossible. You cannot go to Lourdes without seeing human brokenness. And the reality is that there are constantly sick, desperate people at Lourdes. And that is a real gut check, I think, especially for Americans. Because we tend to, and I'm not like fussing at us or anything, this is not a bad thing, but we tend to tuck our sick away, right? We'll put them in hospital rooms, we'll put them in nursing homes, we'll put them in special care facilities, so that on a normal day-to-day life, you almost never see somebody who's seriously ill, right? You don't see them seriously ill in the grocery store. You don't see them seriously ill at the football game. You don't see this. You don't see the desperation. You don't see the heartache. And the reality is that you see it all at Lourdes. I mean, it's this incredible mix of people who are kind of like, you know, halfway well-to-do at least. They can travel to Lourdes. And then the people who came to Lourdes because they have no other hope. Desperate, poor, broken people. And the love with which they're met is incredible. It makes me good. I do not cry much. Witnessing the care and the love that's shown to people in greatest suffering at Lourdes is incredible. And that's part of the miracle of Lourdes too. Because most of us, most of the time, don't have it within us to be truly generous and loving to those who are truly hurting. It's exhausting. It takes a lot out of us. We may have good intentions. Most of us, most of the time, faced with that kind of suffering, are more likely to be scared and avoidant and guilty than we are to be loving. And yet, in Lourdes, because of the example of Mary herself, because honestly, you can't be at Lourdes and neglect the sick. I mean, like, how could you do that, right? Because of the example of love of Mary herself, people are inspired to be gentle, to be loving, to not avoid, but to be there with, to accompany, to be in solidarity with those who are suffering the most. There is a French documentary that came out a few years back. I don't remember exactly when. I've talked about it on Facebook before. It's made by atheists. And it's about Lourdes. And they do not at all impose their view at all on the documentary. All they do is follow five desperate people with the camera and just talk to them about what's going on, what they hope for at Lourdes. And then you just see. You just see. That even people who are not physically healed are loved. And that so much of their suffering was never physical pain to begin with, but the isolation, the feeling of ostracization, the lack of communion, the exile that comes from serious illness. I don't have serious illness. I have chronic illness. And yet still I feel exiled half the time because I can't show up to things I'd like to. I can't be there for people in my life that I'd like to. And that hurts. I can't imagine. I mean, I can't imagine. I can't imagine living with like a serious brain injury and being unable to work or do anything productive and living that way for your entire adult life. I can't imagine having something like progressive loss of your spinal function and have that get worse and worse over life. I can't imagine being the kind of person who has to live in a perpetual care facility where instead of being, you know, having people who are friends there, you mostly only have people who are paid to deal with you and people who pity you. I mean, there are wounds of the flesh, but there are wounds of the spirit too. And there's a lot of healing for the wounds of the spirit at Lourdes. Even among those who look healthy on the outside. But I'd like to go deeper into this reality, this image of the waters of Lourdes, this image of Our Lady dressed in white. One day, not today, one day, we're going to have extra money and I'm going to pay a painter to go to that stupid statue in the church and paint it the right colors. Okay. I love our statue in the church. Whoever painted it did it wrong. This is right. That Mary was dressed in blinding white with a blue sash, and that she had yellow roses on her feet and a rosary made out of yellow roses, not red like we do in the church. Okay. This is why I asked for the pale yellow today. It's pale yellow roses. And I'm going to be talking about a number of themes. We're going to go deep biblically here for a second. The reason I'm pointing this out is because I think, remember, Mary eventually revealed that her name was the Immaculate Conception. There, the oldest title for Our Lady, aside from maybe Mother of God, the oldest title for Our Lady, if you go all the way back in the earliest documents of the church, is New Eve. That Mary is the New Eve, the beginning of the new creation, correspondent to the new Adam, who is Jesus. Obviously, they're not married, but still co-workers. And that's why, and I've told you this before, that's why I think it's so beautiful that she manifests, at the greatest apparition, she manifests her control over creation, right? So at Fatima, she makes the sun dance in the sky. At Guadalupe, she makes the December hill burst forth in roses. And at Lourdes, she brings forth healing waters, literally from pig crap. Okay, literally, healing waters to cure illness. Now, guys, like, look, if I hadn't told you that about Lourdes, and of course it's all cleaned up now, but if I hadn't told you that about Lourdes, everybody look at me, if I hadn't told you that about Lourdes, and I told you instead that you had to drink water from the floor of a stable, how many of you would be worried about getting sick? Raise your hands. Isn't it amazing that it's exactly that water that became healing? Everything that we know about sanitation, everything that we know about cleanliness, everything that we know about hygiene is deliberately flipped in Lourdes. Not to undermine science, but to show that she is in fact the new Eve. That she can take what is defiled, what is broken, what is twisted, and make it healing. Just like she does with the people in the waters who are broken, wounded, sick, and they wash in the waters. Let me ask you another question. How many of you would want to drink bath water after it's been used to wash a leper? No one. And yet, in this case, it's not the disease that's communicated to the water, but the water communicates healing to the diseased. There's a deliberate show of power there. When we had Mass at Lourdes, just like today, the gospel is the wedding feast of Cana. And the wedding feast of Cana shows, of course, that Mary's intercession can have Jesus work miracles. But the wedding feast of Cana, as I've already mentioned to you before, goes deeper than that. It's a sign of new creation, right? The six stone water jars representing the 6 days of creation. And Jesus' ability to transform the waters. I need you to understand that it's not like, okay, that happened there and then the Lord's happens here. It's the same power, it's the same sign, it's the same reality of Mary interceding and Jesus transforming, literally transforming the waters. This time, not from water to wine, but from putrefied water to healing water. Because he is the new Adam and she is the new Eve. And when I tell you about the beauty of Lourdes, it is a beautiful place. Lots of other beautiful places around there. And no place do you feel like at Lourdes where you feel in the depths and the atoms of the very reality where you feel that you're in the presence of a new creation. That this is what Eden was always meant to be like. And it's not for nothing that water plays a huge role in the creation narrative. In the beginning, when God created the heavens and the earth was a formless wasteland, and the Spirit brooded on the waters. In Hebrew, in the Hebrew mindset, as in many ancient peoples, water was not a sign of life. Okay, the seas were not a sign of life. Now, like a little glass of water, that would be a sign of life. But water in itself was regarded as destructive and chaotic. And if you look throughout all the Old Testament and even parts of the New, evil lives in the sea. There's a reason why when the guy said, we're legion, and Jesus kicks them out into the pigs, and then the pigs, remember where the Lord's is, and the pigs go running immediately into the sea. Because water was dark, because water could drown, because water was labile, movable, because water could not be controlled, because water would fall from the sky in torrents, because floods would wipe away homes, water in the Old Testament, not like spring water, but water, like the seas, were seen as a place of darkness, of evil, of chaos. I do think, if we're going really deep, when you think about in the book of Revelation, the dragon comes up out of the water to attack the woman who has given birth to God's son. The woman standing on the moon, clothed with the sun and crowned with 12 stars. And the woman is kept safe, but the dragon is defeated. I know that what I'm about to say is deep, and I know that what I'm about to say is a mystery, and I understand that you may not be able to follow this leap. I can't spell it out for you the way that I normally can, because it's something of my heart and of my soul rather than my mind. But as death and illness belong to the devil, as sin belongs to the devil, and as in so many places, swine and water belongs to the devil. So in Lourdes is where Mary, radiant white, clothed in the sun, crushes the devil. That there is a defeat of evil on a literally cosmic level that takes place at Lourdes. Yes, the evil of sickness. Yes, the evil of death. But again, as I mentioned, far more confessions at Lourdes than miraculous healings. Far more conversions at Lourdes than miraculous healings. Far more people finding faith at Lourdes. There is a place on this planet. I just can't get over this, and I don't think we really understand this. I talked about this last year. There is a place on this planet that is a physical place that you can go to that has miraculous waters where the devil has been defeated, where evil has been defeated. It's like we found the fountain of youth and nobody really seems to care. I mean, 10 million people a year care, but if you compare that to the whole world, that's incredible. That's unspeakable. Please understand that for 1828 years between Jesus' resurrection and Lourdes, there was no place like that on the face of the planet. There was nowhere that you could go. And for the past 160 or so years, we've lived with a place of healing water. And let's go even deeper in the New Testament, or in the Old Testament, excuse me. Mary is named from Moses' sister, Miriam, in Hebrew. Moses' sister was a prophetess. There are three places, if you count Jewish tradition, where Miriam is connected with water. The first, connected with water on both sides in this one, the first is when they cross the Red Sea, and then Miriam starts singing and dancing with the tambourine, and that's when they discover 3 days later, but it's connected in the text. It's like one sentence following the other, is where they discover the unclean waters of Mara, the bitter waters. Can't drink it. Of course not. It's in the desert. It's polluted. It's, you know, chemical, right? Y'all understand, I know we don't have deserts in Louisiana, but y'all understand that, right? They're like salts and things that make the waters in the desert. You can't drink it. And right after Mary's song, right after Miriam's song, Moses throws wood into the waters and they're cleansed so that they can be drunk. Do you see the connection between Miriam in the Old Testament and Mary at Lourdes? Going to the dirty waters and making them clean. The second connection is, this is interesting. Y'all remember that Moses struck the rock and water came out? Y'all remember that? That's connected to Miriam's death. In the book of Numbers, it's two verses that follow one right after the other. Miriam died, and the people had no water. Now, Jewish tradition says that the reason for that, this is not in the Bible, okay? I don't think it's accurate, but it's interesting the connection they make there. They say that the reason for that was because Miriam was a prophetess, and that the clean waters of Marah actually followed the people of Israel through the desert as long as she was alive to pray for them. And that when she was no longer there, the people of Israel ran out of water. And that's why Moses had to strike the rock and new water burst forth. Well, dear brothers and sisters, we could look at that in both ways with Mary. Mary who prays for us and so the waters accompany us. But also Mary, not whose death, but whose assumption and apparitions struck the rock at Lourdes. Struck the rock at Lourdes and water poured forth to heal the peoples. Now, St. Paul goes further and says, I know this is all very kind of symbolic and interlaced, but this is how the Bible works. St. Paul goes further and says, in the Old Testament, they had water from the rock. And this is scripture though. I mean, he's alluding to extra scriptural Jewish tradition, but now that he said it, it's in scripture, okay? He said, and the rock followed them. So that older tradition about Miriam of what happened before the rock, they said, now the rock followed them. It's an interesting rock. It followed them for 40 years through the desert and was constantly producing water. And then St. Paul says, and the rock was Christ. And the rock was Christ. The rock was Christ. So now I want you to come to a different correlation of images. I want you to look at Good Friday, where you have the rock on the cross, Miriam standing at his feet, and the soldier who strikes him. And the rock was Christ. And blood and water poured out, and that's the salvation of the whole world. And now take that image and go to Lourdes, where you have the rock and you have Bernadette bearing the cross, right? Doing penance, offering sacrifice for sinners, and Miriam is standing there. And the rock is struck, and water pours forth for mankind. We can go even deeper in the fact that the opening of the side of Christ was regarded as a symbol of Adam, Eve being taken from the side of Adam, and the church being taken from the side of Christ, right? Baptism and the Eucharist, blood and water. But remember that in Genesis 2, before God did that, God formed Adam, right, out of the mud of the ground, the muck of the ground. We say the dust of the earth. That's not what it actually says. It says muck. And so there's Bernadette digging through the muck until the side is opened and water pours forth. Now I understand that that is all very symbolic. And I understand that you might say, well, I'm not entirely sure that all of that lines up, Father Sensat, and that's okay. But there are things that the scriptures reveal to us analytically where we can say, okay, 2 plus 2 equals 4 times 2 equals 8 times 2 equals 16, where we can make a chain of reasoning all the way through. And there are things that the scriptures and the faith reveals to us symbolically, where you have to say, okay, I can't analyze how this goes to this, and that makes me concerned because I don't know that I can check my work, but I can say that there is a symbolic connection, and that connection is real. Just because a connection is symbolic instead of analytic doesn't mean that it's not real. For example, I know I'm going off on a little bit on a tangent here, but if I brought a bouquet of roses to a single woman in the parish, how many of you would be a little bit nervous? Raise your hand. Okay. And if I said, I don't understand why you're nervous, logically these are just plants, you'd be like, that's not what they symbolize, Father. Okay, that's not what they symbolize. I was like, well, you can't prove that these roses have anything to do with romantic intention. It's just a symbol. It doesn't mean it's any less real. Do you understand? And so there are symbolic connections there. And if you didn't know that roses meant romance, you might be like, well, how do you know that roses mean romance? Well, you have to get into the system. You have to think through the implications. In the same way, all these different things are constantly interpenetrating, right? Mary and Miriam, Jesus and Adam, the rock and Lourdes, water and water, muck and muck. These things are how the Bible works, right? The way these different symbols illumine one another. And so, dear brothers and sisters, I want you to really think about the fact that Lourdes is a private revelation, absolutely. That Lourdes is not part of the Bible, absolutely. But also that Lourdes is richly biblical. Okay? This is not just, that's nice, and people go. One of the ways that we know that it actually is the mother of the Lord appearing is because without even explaining all this to Bernadette, if you examine this, everything that's happening there is richly biblical, completely in line with the way that God acted in public revelation. Same thing at Fatima, right? You might say, oh, what does the sun dancing in the sky have anything to do with anything? Well, it was apocalyptic predictions at Fatima, and a lot of times Jesus says about the apocalypse, there will be signs in the sun and the moon and the sky. You will see things. You'll see the sun be darkened. You'll see all this stuff. Right? It's biblical. And that's so important to understand. We live in a world that is analytic by nature. And that's a good thing. That's not a bad thing. But we tend to look at everything as if we're able to stand apart from it and observe it from the outside. You understand what I'm saying? Like, oh, the church teaches this. Well, let me take that teaching and slap it down on the table and assume that I can dissect it and figure it out for myself. Not always. We're not objective scientists floating above the world trying to analyze it from outside. We live in the midst of it. A lot of the times, the commitments and the life that we have, the things that we've experienced already, are going to affect what we observe and affect our understanding of it. Why am I saying this? There are a lot of times when we tend to think of the faith of the Bible as something that happened in the past that is over there and nice and tidy, and I can just examine it and apply it to my life as I see fit. But what if the kind of events that happened in the Bible are still happening today? Which, of course, they are. This is the same God. Just because public revelation is done doesn't mean that God has changed. Dear brothers and sisters, I need you to understand that it's not really neat that Lord's happened because it looks like something that happened in the Bible. I need you to understand that it's the same God that did the thing in the Bible and the thing at Lord's. Let's say it wasn't in the Bible. Let's say it was at Plaisance. And I told you that a priest and a woman prayed over a septic pond and they threw wood in it and suddenly became clean and able to drink. You'd freak out and you think that pretty cool. Or maybe you doubt it. Or maybe you gossip about it. But put it in the Bible and you're like, oh, this is like this some untouchable thing that I can't relate to real life. The same things are happening. Same God at work. And if anything, the miracles are more common now than they were then. Not the miracles were ever common. Dear brothers and sisters, I think that's the last thing that I want to focus on when we think about the miracle of Lourdes. But yes, it happens through Our Lady. Yes, it happens at the intercession of Our Lady. Yes, it happens through the penance of Bernadette. Yes, all this is true. But it's still God. It is God who acts. Sometimes we think that by honoring Mary, we're dishonoring God. That's theoretically possible. But normally it doesn't happen. Normally the reason we honor Mary is because we're honoring God. Let me give you an example. If Mary was exactly the same as she was, except that she was not the mother of God, but just a great woman who was a consecrated virgin, and maybe even was Jewish, not Catholic. None of you'd be wearing blue for her. You'd be like, oh, okay, I mean, it's nice, great saint. Yay. You wouldn't have statues of her everywhere. It's exactly because she's the mother of God that she gets so much honor. In honoring her, we honor him. Right? And in looking at what she did at Lourdes, we're looking at what he did at Lourdes. With and through her. And it is, in fact, the kind of miracle that's biblical. Like, it's that big. I mean, we think, rightly, of how incredible it was that God rained down manna for 40 years in the desert. It's incredible. Like, that's not a small miracle. That is a repeatable, long-lasting miracle. You know, like Lourdes. Because Lourdes wasn't just one person got healed, or two people got healed, or people got healed for a year. Millions of people are still going year after year, and there are still healings happening. This is the kind of earth-shattering miracle that, had it happened 2,000 years ago, would have been reported in the scriptures. Literally earth-shattering. Broke the earth and healing waters came forth. It is the sign of the new creation. Because God's miracles are all signs. And I want you to appreciate that. I want you to respect that. I want you to cherish that. The magnitude of the miracle at Lourdes. The awe of this place. Because I think that's another reason why people are still going. The sun no longer dances at Fatima. Roses no longer grow at Guadalupe. the water still heals it, Lords. It is a sign of an ongoing covenant, promise of God with his people. And in that, of all the miracles, it approaches to the one category of physical things that God does in this universe that is greater than miracles. There's only one category of things that God does that's greater than miracles, but they are all greater than miracles. And that's the sacraments, where God, every single time, reaches into this creation, makes it new, and through creation, sanctifies us. And if you want to look at how incredible Lord's is as a miracle, how powerful those waters are as a miracle, how marvelous it is that it's still healing people 160, 170 years later. Look at the waters of baptism. Look at the oil of anointing. Look at the bread and wine that becomes the Eucharist. And realize there's something even greater than Lord's here. In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit, amen.